Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone. It's nice to come back to the Canando family like this. And each week, you know, we see old family members and we greet new family members. It's kind of joyous and exciting to see everybody coming together from so many different and distant places. I'm sure most of you, if not even all of you, have read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. In the very beginning of the book, in the prologue, in fact, Suzuki Roshi wrote, or he said, if you discriminate too much, you limit yourself. If you are too demanding or too greedy, your mind is not rich and self-sufficient. When your mind becomes demanding, when you long for something, you will end up violating your own precepts. If you keep your original mind, the precepts will keep themselves. Of course, as we recognize, he's talking here about greed, you know, the basic principle of Buddhism that says the cause of all suffering is greed. And what he said in this short passage is enough. It's all we need to know. If you are too demanding or too greedy, your mind is not rich. And what he's implying is that we should base our practice simply on not being greedy. We should practice letting go of desire. And actually, we don't need to read anything else about Zen to know its message and its teaching. But then comes the practical aspects. How do we know when our mind is becoming too greedy? And can we even know that? And how is it possible to recognize when our mind is greedy? Because if we actively look for greed in our mind, we won't find anything. We won't see anything. We won't recognize something. And so we may think, well, I don't see anything here. My mind isn't greedy. Yeah, it's very easy. It's very easy, as we know, for our mind to fool itself. Our mind always wants to picture itself in the very best light that it can. Our mind wants to make a flattering portrait of itself, so it hides the unflattering parts. It is very difficult to judge or to measure or to evaluate our mind with our mind. In other words, we cannot take an accurate snapshot of our mind. The view will become very distorted. So if you are familiar with the software called Photoshop, where you can manipulate a photograph or an image, we have a tendency to apply our very own cropping and tint features that you find in Photoshop. We crop and tint the image we have of ourselves so that we can create something like an ideal image of ourselves. And it's a habit we get into, we humans, that is, until we learn to practice selflessness. When we practice, when we let our mind be calm and aware and become free of the responsibilities of our everyday life, we begin to see a bit of the nature, the true nature of reality. And we notice that our life, the reality of our life, is like water that is flowing and clouds that are drifting. And we realize that reality never stops. Reality is never stopping. And it is never the same moment by moment. So the truth is, we cannot ask reality to pose for a picture. A snapshot of reality is not a true picture. And any image we have in our mind of ourselves is not reality. It is a memory or an emotion or a fantasy or a dream. And if we become too attached to it, we develop or we encourage a small mind and cannot appreciate reality. Our own mind, each of our own minds, are not different from reality. The mind is reality itself. And this is one of the teachings of our practice. We are always in motion. Our mind is always in motion, just like reality itself. We cannot stop it. But we try to take snapshots anyhow. Snapshots of memories and feelings. And this is not bad. We need to do this. We need it so that we can share ourselves with each other, talk about how we feel, talk about our experiences, talk about our memories. It makes our life rich. But it's not reality. If we attach to a snapshot of our mind, we become demanding. And that's how we become greedy. So we have to view our mind a different way, not with our intellect or with our emotion. There's a well-known koan that's titled, Why Did Bodhidharma Come to China? So in this koan from centuries ago, the monk Ryuge asks Master Suibi, what was Bodhidharma's intention in coming to China? Suibi said, pass me the meditation chin rest. You know, I don't know if you're familiar, but in the old days in China, they would sit in zazen all night and they would try to keep themselves awake by using what's called a chin rest, a long stick, the top of it fit under your chin and the bottom of it you held in your hands this way. Bottom of it would be in your hands and you'd put that in your lap and the stick would hold up your chin so that you could stay awake all night. So Suibi says to Ryugi, pass me the chin rest. Ryugi handed Suibi the chin rest, and Suibi struck him with it. And Ryugi says, if you strike me, I will let you. But after all, that was not the intention of the patriarch coming to China. So on his journeys, Ryugi later visited the famous teacher Rinzai. And he said to Rinzai, what was the intention of Bodhidharma in coming to China? And Rinzai says, pass me the meditation mat. And no sooner had Rinzai received the mat, he struck Ryugi with it. And Ryugi said, again, if you strike me, I will let you do so. But that is not the patriarch's intention coming to the West. So these stories, these koans, for us to understand their intent, we have to see them in a way that's not usual. Now in this story, Ryugi thought he knew something, and he was testing the teachers, testing them intellectually with his mind. He's asking why. Why did Bodhidharma come? But the teachers, in striking him with the stick or with the cushion, he's saying, like, nobody can explain to you what Bodhidharma did. The mind cannot explain Bodhidharma's activity. It was simply his activity that we can understand only through our non-intellectual activity, such as striking with a stick. And that response by Suibi, striking him with the stick, he is saying, you cannot ask such a question. You cannot take a snapshot of Bodhidharma. If we want to understand the activity of our practice, we have to do Zen activity. Asking about it is not doing it. And that's why Ryugi got hit. You can't ask about it. That's not it. It means that if we ask, why did Bodhidharma do that? Or what if he'd done something else? Or some intellectual question like that, it is like trying to take a snapshot of Zen activity. So when we study Suzuki Roshi and really incorporate what he was trying to tell us, his message to us is, instead of asking questions like why, just do Zazen. That was Bodhidharma's reason for coming to China. That is the why behind Bodhidharma's activity. So Suzuki Roshi admonishes us to not be greedy. However, it's hard to avoid it. We can't help it, we human beings. We embrace the world through our eyes, through our ears, through our nose, and through our tongue. And that leads us to discriminate, like and dislike, good or bad, desire or aversion. And when we discriminate that way, greed occurs in that instant. This is what Suzuki Roshi was trying to tell us. And if we attach to that feeling, that is when we become too greedy. So we can't help but being greedy because of our discriminating senses. But our practice tells us, our practice conditions us or helps us to not stick to an initial feeling of greediness or of desire, or else we lose our way through stickiness. Usually, greed as we know it, greed is usually associated with the material things of this world, the consumer items, you know, the shiny things we see or want. But it is emotional greed that is the source of all other greed. And it is very difficult for us, normally, it is very difficult for us to admit our emotional greed, because we human beings have desire for power or admiration or for fame or for being in control. So if we do not accept, if we do not recognize our desire for material things, we may think, I am not greedy. But it's not, that's not there all there is to do, to, that's not there all there is of greed. The intellect cannot recognize such a thing as too much greed. If we think we can, if we insist that we can recognize our own greed, this is a bit of arrogance. And this is how we lose our way. The analytical mind, the logical mind, will have a very difficult time recognizing its own greed. The best way to recognize our emotional greed is our Zazen practice. So when we sit quietly in Zazen, in the Zendo, or at home, if we feel impatience, we know that is greed for something. If we are disturbed by physical discomfort and seek for comfort, that is another form of greed. If we are irritated by something in the environment where we're sitting, some kind of noise or something that seems to disturb us, that is also greed. And we will end our Zazen by saying, oh, I didn't gain anything today. It's not the fault of Zazen that these negative feelings arise. Some people mistakenly say, oh, look, Zazen brought out all these negative emotions. It's not true. It's not the fault of Zazen. So it would be foolish to quit the practice and run away. It will be a lost opportunity. To feel these feelings in our Zazen, impatience or discomfort or irritation, to feel these feelings is a blessing, because they display for us what our mind is demanding. And that illustrates, that display illustrates the need for practice to put an end to greediness, to regain our balance, to regain what Suzuki Roshi called our self-sufficient mind. When we experience these feelings in our practice, we need some encouragement. We need to encourage ourselves. We need encouragement from our Sangha. And we need encouragement from our teacher. With that kind of encouragement, we can make an effort to accept ourselves as we are. That is, a human being that has a greedy tendency. If we can accept ourselves this way, if we can accept this usually unflattering portrait of ourselves, when we accept ourselves this way, we can drop off any made-up ideas we have about ourselves. But until we can accept this part of our human nature, we will always be at risk for greed and for being overwhelmed by our demanding mind. So just sit. Just sit with an alert mind, with confidence, with humility, and allow everything to appear without trying to obtain something. And forget about time. If we get concerned that, gee, this Zazen period is taking a long time, this concern for time is another way of trying to get something. And trying to obtain something from Zazen is another form of greediness. So when a disturbance appears in our mind and in our life, we accept it. This is how we can notice our demanding mind. Then we will not be in danger of losing the precepts. Thank you.
Thank you, Les. I feel like I just had a brand new introduction to sitting. I kept trying to think, greed, what does he mean by greed? and you really clarified that for me. All the things that come up in sitting, it's like we want. I call it my wantonness. I want things to be different than they are or uncomfortable. But when thoughts just kind of come up, I know we're supposed to let them just kind of be there and pass through, don't hold on to them, don't chase them away. But I still find myself going down these rabbit holes of thoughts. You know, I catch myself like somewhere with a thought, and then I can trace back like I did follow the thought along. So I still struggle with that after all these years. So I wonder if you have anything to say about that. Am I judging myself because that happens? Should I just accept that that happens?
What is it you're struggling with?
I don't know. I feel like my mind still chatters a lot and that I get lost chasing thoughts. And
okay.
Maybe I'm expecting myself to be different. Superhuman who doesn't have all these thoughts okay. Chattering all the time.
What do you mean by chatter?
It's like a thought here, a thought there that keeps popping up and I let them be. But then I catch one and I follow it.
Okay. Don't think of that phenomenon or that process in a negative way. Don't beat yourself up because it happens to you. It happens to everybody. Look at it, take a different view of these thoughts and say, oh, look, my mind is still trying to be creative and to do beautiful things. And that's good. I'll just postpone that until after Zazen. So if you take a, you know, sometimes you come across a building and you look at it and you say, gee, that's an ugly building. But then you walk around and back and say, wow, this is beautiful. So I would say, try to see the creativity in what your mind is trying to do.
Huh.
And not feel bad that it is, you know, doing what human minds do.
Yeah.
You're being Diane.
Again. Yeah. Still.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Les. Thank you so much for your talk. What you were just saying to Diane about not beating yourself up when you find that you've gone off down a rabbit hole of thinking reminds me of a wonderful talk that Alan Liu gave many years ago with the old Zendo, where he talked about that same phenomenon. And he said, when you suddenly realize that you've gone down one of those rabbit holes, don't beat yourself up and say, bad meditator, bad, bad. He said, what you should say to yourself is, I'm back. The thing I wanted to ask, Les, is I really can relate to what you said about if you try to, not through your practice, but just thinking about your own mind, you try to identify that greed and see it, that you really can't find it that way. The thing that I noticed, though, is that if I think back in my life to earlier points in my life, especially if I think quite far back, I can perceive those problems in myself so much more clearly than I can when I look at myself now. And I'm just wondering what it is about looking back at your behavior and your attitudes in the past that somehow makes those wrong turns seem much more clear and obvious than they do in the present.
Maybe it's because we take those old experiences and the memories from the past and we mount them in a frame and we mount them on the wall of our museum. And we, as we pass them by every day, they become more ingrained. We see them as, you know, static things that have some kind of permanency, these old experiences. What we have to learn to do is walk on by. Hello, you're there. Goodbye. I'm going. I'm moving on. I think we all have a museum. We all carry around a museum or a scrapbook of images of these old experiences. And in some way, we're fond of them. So we take out the scrapbook from time to time and look at it. And remember with some kind of, maybe with some kind of reverence, what it was like when we were younger. It's okay to do that, you know. Just, we shouldn't linger there. We should do who's that, Alan Bloom, I think you said?
The visitor back at the old Zendo?
Yeah, when he said.
Alan Liu.
Oh, Alan Liu, yeah, when he said, look, I'm back. That's what we should do. Come back, come back. That's what we do in Zazen. Oh, just, I'm back. Thank you. Hi, Umar.
Hi, Les. I find myself getting angry at other people And sometimes I see desperation in people. And what I'm coming to understand more and more, that it is not the desperation of other people that I'm angry at, it's my own desperation that I'm getting angry at. And so I find myself, when I'm sitting in meditation, things will come up like that. And then I find myself judging myself. So it just turned into a very cyclical sort of a thing, that I was angry at other people and I realized that I was angry at myself, and now I'm judging myself, and now I'm angry about judging myself, you know, angry with myself. And it's just like, it just becomes sort of rabbit or dog chasing its own tail. And then it's like the bell rings and Zazen is over. You know, so it just, when you were talking about greed, I came to realize that greed, underneath desperation, is also greed. And
yes, we're desperate for something.
Yes, yes. And also underneath my anger is some kind of fear. And that's another thing that I need to address and sit and meditate with and see what is going on with me. And that's what I'm trying to understand, that there is some kind of, you know, greed underneath all of this that's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't analyze so much.
Okay.
I mean, what you describe, we all understand what you're describing. Mm-hmm. The desperation, the fear, the anger. The fire alarm. Oh, forgive me. I don't know why it does that. Maybe an ant crawled in there or some dust or something, but that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
No fire here, as far as I can tell. Anyway, yeah, we all experience what you described, Umar, our fears, our desires, our desperations. We all go through that. We are fortunate to have this practice that can help us see those things are not what's real. Those things are transient emotional states. So we sit and come back to ourselves, to our self-sufficient mind. We let Zazen ground us and let the desperation dissolve. So if you notice, you know, any one of those things that you just mentioned, say, I notice you. Take a seat and don't, you know, if you say, oh, I see where you came from, and I see, oh, I see where that came from, and I see where that came from, rabbit hole. Thank you. Hi, Jayshree.
Hi, Les.
Hi.
Good to see you. Good to see everybody. I have a question about this idea of questioning. So the monk was questioning and asking, so seeking answers. So a lot of people I've talked to, and I just, you know, in conversation, will say that they're seeking, like seeking to know, seeking the meaning of life, let's say, or seeking the purpose of life. So it sounds to me like this whole idea of seeking because that's what he was doing. He was seeking answers, but yet that was being greedy. So if we seek, then is that, I mean, how do you stay on the path without seeking? So I have that problem too, because I used to, when I look back at myself, I used to ask a lot of questions, and I find myself doing less of that. And I don't quite understand, have I stopped seeking?
Huh?
And is that good, or is that, I'm just
okay.
Not sure. So that, I guess that's, can you address the idea of seeking?
We have a problem. It becomes difficult for us when we do that, because we feel it is the I that is seeking. I am seeking me. And we will spend our whole life seeking if we think that it is the I who must make the discoveries. In our practice, we let go of the I who seeks and just let the world present itself to us. You know, in your daily life, you do have to seek. When you prepare a lesson, you have to seek for some explanation to give to your students. And that's fine. That's good. That's what we do in our life. But to seek for answers for such large questions like meaning, we can't seek for an answer to that kind of a question in the same way we seek to find an answer to an economic problem, which is, I know, is your livelihood. So we let those questions, or our desire to understand that part of our world, let the world, let reality present itself to us. If we seek too much, we lose the mind of acceptance. If our mind is always seeking, we can't appreciate the butterfly, the flowers, the moon. If we ask, what is the moon? If we seek an answer to a question like that, we won't be able to appreciate the moon. So we just stand underneath the moon and look at it. It's a bit difficult to see the world that way, to do that, because we are so trained in seeking for answers and for solving problems. And that's where our practice can save us. In Zazen, we don't seek. We let things appear. And we come away from Zazen wiser than when we started. So it's okay to seek, but keep it in its place. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to add, Les, that I think that's happened in a way, and I really want to express my appreciation to you and the practice that I know over the whatever 10 years it's been, that's exactly how I started, a lot of questions. And over the years, they've gone away. And I just want to express my appreciation to you, particularly because I think what you're describing is exactly has been kind of my journey. And I'm so appreciative of that.
Okay. Thank you. Teresa.
Hi, Les. Thank you for your talk. And thank you everybody for the questions. I've been struggling with sitting the 40-minute period. I usually become impatient and check the clock, and then I don't stay for the 40-minute. So thank you for your talk tonight. It was helpful. The question I wanted to ask you is about self-compassion. How would you describe self-compassion?
Self-compassion. You know, sometimes we fall into the trap of watching, of making up our own YouTube video that displays all of our mistakes, all of our judgments that didn't work, all of the things where we wish we had done it differently, all of the hurt feelings we may have created, all of the times when we weren't totally truthful with someone. You know, we make a video out of them and we review them constantly and endlessly. So the best way to have self-compassion is to turn off the switch, let the screen go dark. Don't rewind. Don't watch that show again and again. Just say, it happened, move on. We all make mistakes. We don't always do exactly the right thing the way we would have wished. But that does not take away of the beauty of our true nature. So if this video turns itself on for you and you once again see this display, you just tell yourself, oh, that's not who I am. That's something in the past. Where's that off switch?
Thank you. I'm thinking now that it doesn't necessarily have to be judging or negative, that video. It can be, a loving images for yourself too.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
David.
Thank you for your talk, Les. It's always good to hear your voice. There's a pattern to it that's very familiar and comforting to me. Much of the difficulties in my life have come from not doing things, not being able to do things, not allowing myself to want something. So it's kind of an inverse image of greed. It's an inability to be agential, to ask for things, to leave things unfinished, that kind of thing. When in the early days, I was with a group of friends and I said, I'm learning to meditate and I'm seeing that it's making me be more patient. And they all were in an uproar. I said, David, the last thing you need to do is be more patient. Like I was going in the wrong direction. I kept on anyway, but it's that kind of negative thinking. Could you comment on that? Is like greed for not doing something and inability to do something.
Well, very often when there is something to be done and we choose not to do it, there could be a number of reasons, but I think the most prevalent reason is a desire for comfort. You know, we see the thing to be done as some kind of work, inconvenient, effort, and part of us says, oh, I just want to be comfortable. I don't want to do that. And there are other reasons too for turning away from something that we know should be done. So keep practicing. Keep noticing your tendencies. And by noticing them, they will dissolve. You can have confidence in your practice. You can have confidence in that. Have confidence in yourself that if you practice, because you really want to live a totally authentic life, if that's your motivation, it will all dissolve.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.